Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Yay! And as we said, Claire, excitement knows no bounds now as we actually consider Joy of Living, colon, a tribute to Ewan McCall, with indeed a direct relation to Ewan McCall, of course, the fabulous, amazingly talented Callum McCall. Callum, good morning. How are you, sir?
I've been accused of a few things, Alex, but that's fabulous, amazingly talented. Yeah, I'll take that.
I think it's important. Now, I mean, I can't believe that we're celebrating the centenary of Ewan McCall. I mean, obviously, the McCall surname is legendary, Kirsty, the whole range of things, yourself, Callum, and so on. But great news, because obviously there's a release of a double CD tribute album, a series of multi-artist live concerts. We're just speaking to Ian Lennox, who's very, very excited about the fact that you're going to be in the Sage Gateshead. Yay! And as we also said, you're going to be in the Liverpool Philharmonic, the Salford Lowry Theatre, and the Barbican London. So lots of things coming through from that point of view. Share with us a bit of the background. I mean, we'll be playing a wonderful tune in a few moments, but how did you get, what was the notion of this? I mean, we spoke extensively with Jamie Anderson this year. It's 50 years of Thunderbirds, of course. Another little interesting scenario. But from your point of view, keeping the legacy of good material together, was this something which you'd always intended to actually go on tour with, of course, the Young Birds?
Well, yes, a couple of things, really. We've been planning this album for about 15 years, unbelievably, along with Martin Goldschmidt from Cooking Vinyl, and we've all got our own lives, and we just didn't get round to it. And then his 100th birthday came up, and we just thought, well, we've got to do it this year, because it's something to hang it around. And people know, the other side of it is people know the really well-known songs like First Time Ever I Saw Your Face and Dirty Old Town, but there's a whole bunch of other songs there that people in the folk movement know, but really deserve a wider audience. So we sat down and we literally picked our 25, 30 favourite songs, expecting that we'd get 12 bites from people that would want to cover them, and actually we got 21, which is fantastic.
Well, hence the double album.
Hence the double album, yes. Very old-fashioned, a double album, but had to be. We didn't want to leave any of it off. It's great. It's really good.
It's wonderful from that point of view. We can't hold back any longer. We need, I mean, Claire's already sort of beside herself with excitement because we have the Young Birds all set and lined up and ready to go. Can I invite you, Callum, to introduce the Young Birds as they launch into the ether here?
Well, this is Jack Steadman and Jamie McCall with the Young Birds.
Summer dungeon, the song is done. Your journey ended, gone away. Journey ended, gone away.
Tempted to use the line hauntingly poignant with respect to that. What do you make it, Claire?
I really liked that. It's very sad, but very beautiful as well.
Callum, I think you richly deserve a round of applause for that. Well done. And let's just go into the background, because obviously it is very sad. It's about a very sad incident that took place in 1961. So, Callum, just share the lines of why you actually came up with this particular song called The Young Birds.
Well, there was a plane crash, and my half-brother Hamish had a friend on the plane. So it was one of the very rare songs that's written directly, that he wrote directly about an incident. A lot of his songs were kind of bigger picture songs. But that was very, very specifically about that incident.
I mean, one of the aspects about folk music, good folk music, of course, across the place, whether it's Pete Seeger in America, whether it's Ewan McCall and company over here, is that they can actually address. I mean, it's the way in which we communicate. We communicate via ballads, we communicate via messages. You can really get a whole sense of the atmosphere and a culture by actually just listening to the folk songs that are being performed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a rich history of the narrative in folk song, where it would be the newspaper of the day, the newspaper for people that couldn't either afford a newspaper or read. So it was a way of communicating news. So a lot of the big historical folk songs are blood and sex. They're the kind of tabloids, musical tabloids of the time, and they're brilliant because the ones that survive generally are the ones that are well written and have been honed in the mouths of ordinary people as they're passed down orally. So the ones that survive are generally very tough songs. And Dad always aspired to write modern folk songs that could be confused with traditional songs. Mm. And in some cases he succeeded, in the cases of things like Dirty Old Town and Shoals of Herring. Shoals of Herring has actually been collected, people swearing that they learnt it off their grandmother.
Strong.
Which they couldn't have.
So. Claire, thoughts and questions for yourself or Callum?
I find it really interesting that it's a story and it tells a story. Mm. And do you find that when, as with books and words, do you find that when you're writing a song or when you're coming to sort of compose a song, I guess, what makes, do you draw from personal experiences or do you tend to go for wider happenings and wider events?
That's a really, really difficult question. That's one of those questions like what comes first, the words or the music?
Yeah.
It's different in different circumstances. I think with Ewan's songs, what he would try to do would be to, it was a bit like the Laban acting technique, he'd try to put himself in the position of either somebody that's lost somebody or the protagonist. Or sometimes, in the case of First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, it's total outpouring from the heart. He wrote that for my mum. They hadn't been together for very long. They were booked to go on a tour of America, and his visa was rescinded at the last minute because he used to be a member of the Communist Party before the Second World War, and it was kind of post-McCarthy. So they'd been apart. For you imagine, you're in the first flushes of love, you're together with somebody, and you're forced to be apart from them for a month. And he wrote it over the phone to her. So that just came straight out of, that bassist point in all of us.
I'm very tempted to actually sort of, in fact, I was going to offer you a choice, but I'm not going to say a choice at all because it would be criminal between the Shoals of Herring and the First Time Ever I Saw My Face. If you'd be kind enough to stay with us, Callum, let's go with Ewan McCall and the First Time Ever I Saw Your Face.
The first time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun in your eyes, and last till the end of time.
Yes, well, I think we identified it wasn't actually Ewan singing there, but never mind. The message comes across. No.
That was me, Mum.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, it's Mr. Computer. That's the thing, Callum. You know, you pull it up, you sort of says, Ewan McCall. What? Where? No! Lord knows who's performing the Shoals of Herring. We'll find out in a few minutes. Never mind. But what did you? I mean, cause clearly we tend to relate it to Roberta Flack and the sort of the classic from that and a different area. But there's a poignancy again about that. I use that word for the second time in Claire.
Well, yeah, because the way that she performs it is, I haven't got This Way Is Better Than That Way particularly. Mm-hmm. But just an observational way she performs it. She performs it conversationally. It's not a performance. Mm. A lot of people have done that song over the years where it's kind of shouting your love message across a ravine. Yeah. The Roberta Flack version is beautiful. That's kind of pillow talk version. Mm. But there are some really hilarious versions of it. The Elvis version, I have to say, is particularly hilarious.
But then
it's got an orchestra and timpanis and a choir. And the Colonel insisted that he didn't, because the Colonel was a bit of a prude, insisted that Elvis didn't sing the third verse. So he sees her face and then he kisses her, and then to consummate it, he sees her face again. So it's a bit odd. Yeah. Well, I know this is before the watershed.
Yeah.
That's as far as I'm going.
Yeah, it's perfectly understandable. And I suppose the tension of the Elvis Presley management system could be a whole new theme. You know, we'll dig it also. A reminder, of course, in terms of people who want to get hold of the double album, of course, Joy of Living, tributes to Ewan McCall, presumably through all the usual sources, Callum?
Yep, all the usual sources, and online and in shops and physical if you want to hold it.
And in terms of the live dates, do we have a web address that we can go to in terms of finding out more details about the Liverpool, Salford, Gateshead and Barbican gigs?
I think it's www. See, I should know this, but I'm 52. I've had these newfangled things. It's ewanmccoll.com, I think, or it could be .co.uk, but if you put in Ewan McColl, M-A-C-C-O-L-L.
Exactly, it will all connect together. It's been an absolute joy to connect with your good self this morning. I think we've been privileged to actually, we're finishing off with, again, the fishing forecast, of course, the shoals of Hurry. No, I'm only kidding there. keeping this sort of thing going. But the two critical questions we need to ask you at this stage are as follows, Callum. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the production today?
I have, yes. It's good. Been lovely.
Excellent. Well, you see, that this is what happens when you have the magic of Tony McDonough, Manila PR on the case. Obviously, you have total faith in his suggestions, recommendations, etc. So the next critical thing is, can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you join us and keep us appraised of the fantastic work you're doing in terms of honouring the memory of your dad, and indeed more as far as the McColl tradition is concerned? Will you return?
Of course I will. Of course I will. Around you'll know where I am.
Around, of course. Yay! And I think we'll actually sort of launch this, and then you can actually say, no, that's not Ewan at all. Is it Ewan singing the shoals
of
Hurry? Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
It is. There you go. Here we go.
With our nets and gear, we're faring on the wild and wasteful ocean. It's there on the deep that we harvest and reap our bread, as we hunt the bonny shoals of Erin. Oh, it was a fine and a pleasant day out of Yarmouth, and I earned the gear that I was wearing. Sailed 1,000,000 miles, caught 10,000,000 fishes. We was following the shoals of Erin.
Excellent. Nice to hear that we actually got some Ewan McColl after all, really. After it was his wife, I suppose. It was Peggy Seeger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all's well with that point of view. If you want to catch up more folk music, of course, Alan Ritson is the man who sort of does a monthly folk sort of show here on Siren 107.3 FM. Look at our schedule, sirenonline.co.uk. The Lincoln Theatre Royal on the 1st of November at 2 p.m. is hosting Hansel and Gretel. Good, they found their way there. Together, an amazingly magical, comedic, and all-round wonderful experience with dragons, illusions, and a full supporting cast set to wow the crowds. There might even be a custard pie or two.
Oh, my.
Exciting show, which is extremely light, family fun, filled, and a feel-good feast, according to the publicity material that John Wenham has provided for us here. It's Hansel and Gretel at the Lincoln Theatre Royal. Tickets, £10 for individuals. A family ticket, £36. And inquiries as ever to the Lincoln Theatre Royal, 01522 519999. That's 01522 519999. In a few moments, hopefully, we've got psychologist Donna Dawson on that psychology of winning. So that would be quite interesting from that perspective. Because at the end of the day, if you've chosen to listen to Siren 107.3 FM, congratulations, you are a winner.
I can see myself, it's a golden sunrise. Young boy, open up your eyes. It's supposed to be your day. Now off you go, horizon bound, and you won't stop until you've found your own kind of way. And the wind will whip your tousled hair, the sun, the rain, sweet despair, brave tales of love and strife. Somewhere on the minstrel sang, you're singing to her now. But it don't matter anyhow, 'cause she knows by now.
Thinking I belong there.
Yes, Yes, I think we know why we went for Agnetha, Bjorn, Benny and Anna Fried. Of course, the winner takes it all. But what about the cost? The cost of one's inner soul. Well, the best way to answer that, of course, is the legend that is our ace psychologist extraordinaire, Donna Dawson. Donna, good morning. How are you?
Oh, Alex, I'm much better for having had that introduction. Thank you so much.
Always a delight to feature your good self. But this particular sort of poll by Mecca Bingo, of course, the attitude and an insight into the UK's attitude towards winning. Are we becoming a more materialistic nation? We've been trying it out on the show so far this morning, and I think inevitably, and Claire will attest to this, most people said, you can't put winning above all else and then finding the love of your life. That way lies madness.
Well, in fact, there was only 4% difference between finding the love of your life, which did come out tops, to winning a materialistic or cash prize, which was very close behind. Mm. So I was interested to see that, 4% in a survey like this doesn't make a lot of difference, and I was quite surprised to see how close they were. But I was also interested to see the differences between men and women. Women are much more about the whole social experience of entering a competition and sharing the win with friends and doing a little dance and being happy if their friend wins instead. Whereas men, much more ruthless, much more the competitive caveman hunter thing going on where they put down higher stakes. If they win, they keep silent about it. They don't want anybody to know in case they jinx it. It's quite interesting, the differences. And older people are much more sanguine, more accepting about the whole win-lose thing. They understand that, sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're not, whereas younger people really take it more to heart, and I would say that would be the 20 to 34-year-olds. So it really depends on whether do you consider yourself lucky or do you consider yourself unlucky. And the lucky people who think, I have as good a chance of winning as anybody else and maybe next time I'll be better off, as opposed to somebody who says, I never win anything, I'm very unlucky, life never gives me anything. There's differences in an attitude that can maybe shape the way your luck pans out.
And that notion of it's in the mindset of being successful. We talk about athletes running races and taking part in competitions and so on. But I mean, Claire, as an undergraduate, finally you're in English, do you feel that the mindset is important in getting that first class honours?
Massively so. I think that if you believe that you can do it, then you are more likely to do it because you will actually sit down and do the work. I'm a very glass half full person, and I think positivity is key, really, especially when you kind of get a bit stressed, and it all comes down to you doing the work at the end of the day.
I think, Donna, you would endorse that, really, in terms of the positivity. It's vital. Otherwise, the saddest statistic, I thought, was probably this survey that 1 in 10 people, well, nearly 1 in 10, 8% actually claim to have never experienced that winning feeling.
I do wonder if people have forgotten the things they have won, because maybe our memories are playing tricks on ourselves. I mean, it also depends whether you enter anything or compete for anything. If you kind of always pull away from that because you're afraid of losing, then maybe that's true. But the whole thing about failure is it can galvanize you to win even more strongly, because you are determined, you've tried to learn the lessons from the failure, you can almost taste the winning, you want it. And, of course, winning makes us feel good. What happens in the brain when we win is the release of a feel-good chemical called dopamine, which it not only makes you feel aroused and alert and happy, but it also encourages you to continue the winning behavior, whatever it is that got you there in the first place. So even if you're feeling a bit down and you feel it's difficult to pull yourself up to keep going, if you can remember a time when you did win and think about it in detail, it puts that mental image back in your brain. It kickstarts that dopamine. You start to feel better about yourself. And as your guest said, you start to believe in yourself. If you can visualize it, you can break it down into steps that will help you get there, and you can then achieve it.
And actually sort of changing those thought processes, often not as difficult as people think, because I think that's, I can't possibly, it's no good actually saying I can't. I mean, I occasionally have students who say, I can't do this, can't do it. If you keep saying that, you'll just reinforce that negativity.
No such word as can't.
Absolutely. There's a voice in our heads. We all have it, that little negative voice that sits back and carps at us and says, oh, you can't do this, or you shouldn't do that, or you mustn't. And it's And I think we need to cut that voice off straight away. We need to challenge it and say, why can't I do that? And you're wrong, and I'll show you that you're wrong. We need to silence that inner critic and not let it get to us, because it can play over and over again on a kind of negative loop without us doing anything about it. And what happens is you'll inevitably feel more and more down about yourself. And then it's harder to get motivated when you're at a lower point.
And the interesting thing, bearing in mind the upcoming World Cup rugby final that's happening, is that the buzz of winning lasts an average of 4.1 days. So at the end of the day, as long as you can put up with either New Zealand or Australia sort of having bragging rights for, you know, half a week or so, it'll be all right. Just let it go.
Absolutely. It doesn't last forever. But, you know, if you're ever stuck, you can always write down those things you have achieved in your life to help you feel better about yourself. Mm. I noticed in the Mecca survey that passing the driving test was third, and then we had passing university exams fourth place, winning a holiday was also equal with that, getting a bonus at work, booking a holiday you've worked hard for, getting a tax rebate, your first job, and also being reunited with family or friends and having gratitude expressed to you for maybe helping somebody through a tough time. So even that can make you feel like a winner. So, you know, in a way, we're all winners if we get the approval and love that we all need. And I think that's the thing about winning. It does make us feel successful in life. We feel better about ourselves. We feel approved of by others. And that has a knock-on effect. When we're happy, it makes it easier to deal more positively with other people, who in turn react more positively to us. So you get a positive feedback loop.
See, that's the reason we enjoy having you on the programme, Donna, because you can actually sort of just make us feel good just by the very experience of the sort of positivity. It must be something to do with the Boston, Massachusetts background. That's the classic line.
Well, yeah. And, well, I think winning definitely has a win-win effect for both yourself and for the people around you. So, you know, whatever you're doing, whether it's sports or a contest, you know, you do the best you can. If it's just purely up to luck, then if you don't win, you kind of have to let it go and chalk it up to experience. But if it's something you have any degree of control over, it's worthwhile trying to remember times when you won, to remember how that feels, to kind of re-galvanize you, to re-motivate you, and to keep you on track, because sometimes it's hard staying on track. But you have to remember you're doing it for yourself and remind yourself how much you want it, and that will help you.
And it makes perfect sense. Any quick questions from yourself, Claire?
Any good ways to motivate yourself if you've got something you don't really want to do, but at the end of the day it's going to be good for you, i.e. work?
Well, I always give myself a little reward when I've done it, and that could be anything from sitting for 10 minutes with a cup of tea, reading my favourite magazine, or treating myself to a TV programme. You know, even a favorite chocolate bar, but hopefully I don't do that too often, otherwise I'd be putting on weight. Sometimes it is just about knuckling down, and if you have a particular problem, like if I'm sitting in front of a computer screen, for me it helps to have some very subtle background music going on so I feel I'm not alone. You know, I just get myself set up, but I get myself in a positive frame of mind, and I try to see it as a challenge, not a problem, a challenge that you can meet with your faculties, your talents, your abilities, and see how well you can do it. And I think that helps, to approach the whole thing without dread. And then at the end of it, to have a little break, a little reward, and life is good.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Which just makes perfect sense. I mean, it's almost the positivity that's coming out of that. I mean, we've got Rachel Abbott as a producer, you've got Donna in the set. It's just genius. You know, I feel there's waves of positivity coming through the whole thing. Donna, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Alex, I've so enjoyed it. You've made me feel positive. See, we've got the positive loop going.
Yeah, exactly. So I take it we can connect with you again in the near future and keep us appraised, positively speaking. Donna Dawson, talking about this fantastic survey on Mecca Bingo.
Anybody wants more info, go to meccabingo.com.
I was just going to say, there you go. You find out more from that way. Donna, an absolute delight. Take care. And inevitably, from ABBA to hot chocolate. Just tuned into the Madrid Drive Morning Edition. You've missed Kat from Norwich sharing her own unique thoughts and setting the scene. Richard Fitzwilliams and his views on the London Film Festival and Netflix. Ian Lennox on the sporting challenges of Newcastle United. Callum McCall discussing his tributes to his late father, Ewan, of course. Donna Dawson, celebrity psychologist on the psychology of winning. But don't worry, because you can always catch up again, hopefully via the podcast. So it's all good, you see. You can hear it as often as you wish, basically. Let's go to sirenonline.com.
southsidebroadcasting.co.uk or indeed southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com and you'll find the magic coming through there. Jamie Stevens, celebrity hairdresser. Emma Kenny, media psychologist. Theoretically up next to talk about, yes, hair loss. A man's biggest fear. I know, it's too late for me.
It's a struggle.
I'm not going to go for the syrup of figs. It's not, you know, William Shatner toupee. It's not going to work, you know, in any way, shape or form.
I want to be rich and I want lots of money. I don't care about clever, I don't care about funny. I want loads of clothes and I want loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they...
It's all right, Lily. All you need is celebrity psychologist Emma Kenny and a celebrity hairdresser, Jamie Stevens, to address your fear. And it will work okay, won't it, Jamie? Won't it, Emma?
Yes,
of course.
Exactly. Now, Jamie, to start off with, we have been fretting about this for the last hour and 45 minutes on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition because, I mean, in my own case, it's too late. I'm follically challenged for years. There's no point. You know, people are suggesting, go do what William Shatner does. I can't do that. It's ridiculous. But that the notion that actually hair loss is a man's biggest fear, the one, you know, number one cause of anxiety in men's daily lives, actually even more than having your internet history revealed, or indeed other aspects relating to the whole thing. This pelidophobia, you know, I mean, as a hairdresser, do you just sort of think, I laugh in the face of pelidophobia?
Well, no, you know, I've got complete sort of, you know, sympathy for everyone because it's, you know, for me, hair's the main accessory people wear sort of 24/7 that they can't take off. So, you know, for guys, it's their crowning glory and it's their kind of, you know, I think it's like their sort of like their manlyhood. So, you know, when it starts to sort of go, you know, it's a real sort of fear and causes massive anxiety in guys. And, you know, I think we have to sort of, you know, be really understanding about it.
Hmm. I mean, obviously, the research was conducted to launch a Mister. And let's face it, actually, we've got to mention British Hairdresser of the Year. That's the exciting thing. British Hairdresser of the Year, Jamie Stevens.
So I have to, British Hairdresser of the Year nominee this year. I've actually
It'll
I've
happen.
Won men's.
It'll happen.
I've won men's. Thank you. Well, yes. November the 23rd. Keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, they will. You're already in the Hall of Fame for men's hairdressing, so, you know, on your side. It'll work from that point of view. But again, this whole notion that, you know, it's all about talking discussion, is it one of those things that in the 21st century people are concerned? Because I kind of thought we'd hopefully gone past that, because most people would actually say, well, you know, just shave it all off or go for a completely different look, etc. And it also means that you kind of will possibly look younger in the end.
Well, I think there's always been this perception if, you know, if guys are going thin or they've gone bald, you know, that there's two options. You basically completely shave your hair off or, you know, you go with the things like, you know, Wayne Rooney and Jeremy Piven and people like Callum Best have done and have a hair transplant. So, you know, everyone knows it's so expensive to do that.
And
so,
Jamie, you've missed, of course, the classic Bobby Charlton comb-over. You know, much
beloved. Well, I think, you know, this Bobby Charlton, you know, even though being a Manchester United fan, you know, he's an icon, but just an icon for all the wrong reasons. Because he actually put the fear of God into people with this comb over, you know, my classic thing would, you know, definitely there's a couple of rules in hairdressing that I would say for thinning hair is definitely do not do a comb over like that.
There you go. Neil Kinnock, of course, and Desmond Morris in the past, but there are Emma, from your own perspective, the psychological impact of this anxiety that, I mean, one of the shocking scenarios that came out of this particular survey, when comparing insecurities of men, more men are concerned with losing their hair than they are with the size of their penis. I'll say,
they're more concerned with the size of that. Yeah, what's on top than what's below.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right. And I think that brings it into that reality, because what I kind of really woke up to when I was looking at this research was how we often underplay how important hair is for men. And I think as women particularly, we're people who think to ourselves, oh, it's just one of those things, you know, 50% of men lose their hair, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, for the person losing their hair, it's huge, it's emotional, it's a fear. And unless we start talking about it more, men aren't able to get the support that they require. And I kind of put it in the context of, you know, if you ask a woman what would it be like to lose her hair, she'd say it would be absolutely traumatic. But men every day deal with this, And what's happening is we're not surfacing those issues. The fact that men would rather have a partner cheat on them than lose their hair just shows how significant the fear of hair loss is. And I often think that the silence is the biggest problem because guys don't talk about it. They're not aware of the strategies that they can be employed to either prevent hair loss or deal with it or kind of recognise that there are people out there who can help them on that journey. And I think that it's really sad because lots of men, in fact, a large majority of them, just like yourself, have gone through that experience of losing hair.
Jamie, Hugh Grant, Christian Slater, Ollie Murs, Colin Farrell, Gok Wan, just a few of the clients and the sort of folk that you've actually worked with from that point of view. Has this been anything you've even dared mention? You know, in that sort of notion, say, oh, Colin, you're looking a bit thin on top, for instance. You know, do you feel that what Emma's saying, does that resonate with your own sort of suggestion in terms of when you see it? Because, I mean, clearly, when you're in that role of the hairdresser, you get the total view. We cannot hide from you. You know, it's a case of all our secrets are revealed.
Listen, I think from research that we've done, you know, guys don't actually sort of talk about it. It's really only people that are really close and nearest to dearest to them. You know, most guys I know that are sort of seeing the early signs of thinning, you know, they don't even tell their friends. So obviously it is a really, really touchy subject. But me as a hairdresser, you know, I'm kind of paid, you know, to make these people look as good as possible. So whether it's a celebrity or a normal client, I'm always going to give my honest opinion. You know, so for me, this is the whole reason about, you know, developing the whole Mr. Range is I know that, you know, it is such a fear and an anxiety for guys. So, you know, to create sort of, you know, a new and innovative range that is sort of dual functioning, you know, it's amazing styling, but it also combats, you know, the appearance of thinning hair with sort of strength and thickening agents.
Which, again, is one of those ways in which we can actually address this issue, because is that one of the ways in which we can cope with this? Because we've talked about the challenges, we've looked at that. What can we actually do about this whole notion too? I mean, is it a case of we need to embrace the challenges? Are there sort of tips? I mean, we'll come to you first, Jamie, with respect to tips that you offer for folks who might be listening to this and think, well, it might be just thinning a little bit. I'm a bit concerned. What should we actually do?
Well, you know, we've got the whole sort of strap line of, you know, whether you're 16 to 60, you know, if you've got a great head of hair, then, you know, use these products because they're going to help sort of keep that hair thick. If you're in the early stages, you know, again, use them because it's going to sort of slow down the process of the rate of hair loss. And equally, you know, again, if you're really gone, there's sort of products in there which actually help cover and disguise it. But as a rule, you know, for anyone listening, you know, as a hairdresser, there's a few tips that I would say. You know, when you sort of see a guy who's completely bald on the top, you know, the gene in every man's hair in that head is designed to thin and fall out. Obviously, some are stronger, some are weaker, hence when people go earlier. But everything below that, where you sort of see, you know, the bottom bit of the hair is called the donor area. So this area of every man's hair will actually never thin and fall out. That's actually the area where when people have hair transplants, they take the hair from and implant them back in the gone areas. So the rule is, two rules. The shorter, finer hair is, the thicker it looks. And if you are, again, in the early stages of thinning on the top, then always keep the back and the sides of your hair shorter and thinner than the top, because it will put more emphasis on the top, making it look thicker.
I don't quite know why studio guest Claire Margerison is actually nodding and she's looking down. I'm long farther gone on that sort of basis. But Claire, any thoughts from yourself?
I didn't realise it was such a big sort of problem for men, and I think it's quite sad that they don't feel able to talk about it. I guess that it's almost like women not being able to talk about like their skin issues, or it's kind of that self-consciousness is in both genders, and it's kind of, it needs to be talked about more, I think, to make people feel they can talk about it.
Yeah, you just think about mental health per se, don't you? Men are just a bit rubbish at talking about their feelings and realising they deserve support.
Yeah.
So I think things like this is fantastic. Firstly, it surfaces everybody's fears and anxieties. But secondly, then you can do something with them. I mean, you know, for guys listening now, just knowing there are alternative choices is quite empowering. It's better to talk about it and do something about it and feel productive.
Yeah, do you know what? I think, you know, the classic, you know, it's not a mistake, but, you know, because guys don't talk about it, you know, they're actually then not actively going out and getting any sort of information about it. You know, like speaking to your hairdresser, you know, any good hairdresser should know the fundamental rules of sort of thinning hair. You know, a really big classic for me is especially, say, on sort of European lighter coloured skin, when hair goes thinner, it actually looks worse because it reveals the light scalp. which was one of the sort of reasons behind one of the products in the range called Disguise Spray. It's kind of like a coloured sort of spray. So if you spray it actually on the scalp, it stains the scalp and it obviously gives it the illusion that the hair's thicker.
Extraordinary. I mean, I feel as though I've just entered a whole new world.
Enlightened.
Here.
Exactly. There we go.
I mean, I'm thinking the Mr. Ranger products, it could be Magnificently Regal, if you want to remember that. Magnificently Regal. Just working on that basis. Emma, I can appreciate now why your work on Angry Britain and World's Angriest for Channel 5 literally is award-winning. You know, it's great. And of course, you're in the fifth series of Britain's Darkest Taboos.
I am. Amazing. I am, for all of you out there who like a bit of murder. Yes.
And how often breakfast shows across the land have wanted a bit more murder? Often of the presenter itself.
Yes, I do the light and dark. The light and dark.
It's been absolutely delightful touching base with yourself. Our final couple of questions, actually. Jamie, where can we go to find out more about these kind of things? Is there a website that you'd recommend to actually check out?
Yep, so do you know what? Everyone go to the website, which is Mr. Jamie Stevens. There's all the details on all the products, and there's some amazing how-to videos as well, because I think education is key.
Definitely.
When using products.
Brilliant. Mr. Jamie Stevens will take you there. So two final questions for both of you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting and not too stressful telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, Jamie and Emma?
It's been lovely.
It's been amazing. Very clear, very lovely to speak to you, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
Well,
I hope that some people out there have realised that there are options.
Hope it's helped.
Exactly. So hopefully we can also connect with you again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of these exciting things, particularly interested in the murder one, Emma. I think was the line. <there. laughs> I'll kill that hairdresser. No, it's all right. It'll be fine. Hopefully you'll both return. Take care now.
Bye
now.
Thank you.
I wonder why we wrapped up with Haircut 100. Love Plus One, take us out of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, the last Midweek Drive Morning Edition for October 2015.
Where has the year gone?
But, Claire Margerrison, will you be back to join the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition for November 2015?
If you'll have me.
I think so. You stuck the distance today. You haven't got off to shorthand or anything else. That's important. Well done to Emma Tinson and, of course, Jessica Ward for joining us earlier. Thanks to Richard Fitzwilliams, to Catch, to Ian Lennox, to Callum McCall, to Donna Dawson, Jamie Stevens and Emma Kenny. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us for however long you have been. That's it. We're pretty much out of here. Happy Halloween, or as we'd like to say, Happy St. Wolfgang of Regensburg's Day.
Oh, fabulous.
Exactly. I want to find out who Wolfgang of Regensburg was. But he worried about his hair, but he was a winner and sort of decided all was well with the world. And he probably was a Manchester City fan. Anyway, enough of such stuff. That's it. We're out of here. Great stuff coming on for Siren for the rest of the day. We'll leave you with a little smidgen of Halloween.
Lincoln is set to be spooky next week.
Ah, that's about it then. So the news is coming up from the Sky News Centre. All we have to say now is a happy farewell and goodbye. So a one, a two, a three.
Bye.